The World Tomorrow. Garner Kent Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
It's crazy time. It really is. Alarm and apathy just shouldn't mix. Christian gunmen shouldn't mix, but they do. They don't even go together. I mean, bread and butter does. People think of bacon and eggs, but alarm, apathy, Christian, gunmen. You know, today, when awesome world events demand urgent action, when frightening trends and conditions demand the soberest contemplation, when violence, kidnappings, assassinations, murders, civil wars, hijackings, and the toppling of government ought to cause the deepest kind of introspection, millions doze. Today we've got famine with flatulence, emergency with ease, crisis without concern. None of these really mix, and yet they prevail. You know, you stop to think about people playing poker in a burning house, or swimming in a typhoon, or flying serenely into a thunderstorm in a small airplane, walking lazily, whistling away as they stroll through a minefield, maybe liberally lacing their scotch with arsenic, or lying down to sleep to music on a sinking ship. You get a little more of the idea of what seems to be the attitude of many of the people of this world of ours. Then, I think, almost never since anyone tried what George Gallup did recently. The poll he claimed was the most important one in which he has ever been involved. One in which, this time, he reached abroad, around the world. Not just sampling of various political trends in the United States or what the voters wanted, or about jobs, detente, energy, prices, taxes, the budget, or big government. But this time, he took a sample of over 70 nations around the world because he wanted to find out what people around the world are really thinking. How do you assess their happiness? What they want out of life, what are their goals and ambitions, the worries that they might have, the problems they face, and to prove what their attitudes are toward issues of global concern. Now, of course, he couldn't sample the opinions of people over in the Soviet Union, or he couldn't go over there to Entebbe and get Big Dada Idi Amin to tell him what he thought, because some of these military dictatorships don't allow public opinion to be expressed, nor anyone to come in and sample what that public opinion might be. But in about 70 nations around the world, on six continents representing almost two-thirds of the human race, the most important poll in which George Gallup, the famous pollster, has ever been involved, was history's first global public opinion poll. What mankind thinks about the world and about itself. You know, when it's crazy, some of the things people think are absolutely crazy. There are many myths in which we seem to believe today, just like these many voters who believe in the myth that government can solve their problems, that governments can give them jobs, and at the same time, not refuel inflation, that governments can relieve tax burdens and yet keep the nation strong, that governments can give people guaranteed national health insurance programs and guaranteed minimal wages and more time off the job, more leisure, higher wages, and all the rest of it, and at the same time, trim bureaucracy and bring big government down to little government. We believe these idiotic myths. Millions of people believe those stupid myths. And they're absolutely mythological, totally untrue. They can never happen. You know, even though overpopulation is a leading cause of starvation in India, the Gallup pollsters determined that half of its citizens would like to see their population increase even more. I guess people do like to play poker in burning buildings. I guess people do like to take strolls whistling through minefields. I guess you would swim into a typhoon. If people in the nation of India who are seeing the trucks carrying the bodies that die daily in the streets of Calcutta, piling them on there like cordwood and taking them off to the ghats, you know, the funeral pyres where they burn the bodies and throw the ashes into the holy water, which is nothing but a turgid, muddy river, which is not very holy, but rather polluted. I suppose if people living in a nation as unbelievably impoverished, as hideously overcrowded, and I've been there and seen it, and it's a stench, a sight, a sound, an impact upon the senses, and the very innermost being with which you will live the rest of your life, all you've got to do to find out much of what's wrong with the world is go to India. Go to any one of those poor third world countries and look at the squalid conditions, at the filth, the poverty, the disease, the infant mortality. Look at overpopulation and the lack of food. And can you believe that people, about half of the people of that nation, would like to see their population increase when population increase is the leading cause of starvation in the country? It's unbelievable. But nevertheless, a great majority of the rural populations of underdeveloped countries want to move into a big city. I just don't get it. I don't believe that. But I guess it's kind of like the African who, when he received a guest towel, thought it was decoration. Or like the fellow who, when he received a new pair of shoes, planted a geranium in them. Or like the guy who, when he received a toilet bowl, put it out in the front yard and sat on it as the king of the community. He didn't know what in the world the dumb thing was. He had nothing to compare it with. And so I suppose a peasant without shoes living a good life in the pampas of Argentina someplace, who probably sees better and longer than most people in the affluent industrialized West, who probably lives a longer age, who eats a better diet and breathes cleaner air, wants to go to the big city where all the guerrillas are kidnapping Americans, assassinating, bombing, bludgeoning, stabbing, killing one another. It's unbelievable to me as I escape. Well, I'm one of these escapists in one sense. I like to escape the rotten, filthy botch that they call a city where I have to live. Now, I see other people also escape. And as a matter of fact, the escape industries, meaning golf clubs, skis and ski togs, hunting and fishing equipment, camping equipment, recreational vehicles, and all types, sizes, and assortments of those, from three-wheelers to two-wheelers to the buggies that climb dunes to all of these things you see festooning the tops of the recreational vehicles, going along like a caravan, fleeing the big cities on any given weekend, crowding the environment to the point you can get to the most far-flung mountain wilderness you ever saw, and there's a beer bottle lying there broken that some idiot threw before you, or maybe a rusty can of sardines along the bank where he was supposed to be catching some fish. Of course, it's all put and take out of the hatchery-fed, cheese-raised trout anyway, but we are crawling all over one another to escape these big urban botches where all the crime, the filth, the disease, the overcrowded conditions, and the noise prevail. But at the same time, all these people living out in those rural areas have this deep yearning in their minds and hearts to get into that big city where the rest of us are. So after they get there, they can join the bumper-to-bumper mass exodus every weekend and every national holiday to fight their way out of that rotten box they call a city to get out in that wonderful environment where they used to live. I don't know whether that makes sense or not. It's like wondering every time you're on the freeway, you're going that way, they're coming this way, why don't we all stay where we are and nobody be on the dumb freeway? Why do all those people across town want to come over here where you are? Why does the guy jump in the boat and roar off from the dock, clear across the lake 20 miles away to go fishing while the little kid's catching 15 inches underneath the dock? I don't know. I guess it's the same reason why we always figure the grass is always a little greener and it's got to be better over the next hill. But when you find the great majority of the rural populations of these underdeveloped countries want to move into the big botched-up cities, you can scarcely believe your ears. Now, when this international poll took place, some of the most incredible choices, yearnings, and desires of the human race in 70 nations were revealed. This, by the way, was conducted by 30 research affiliates of Gallup International Research Institute, and the objective was to assess really what mankind thinks about himself. That's not surprising to find out that people in every country around the world want just about the same things. I've said that for so many years. We want to improve our way of life, our standard of living, better health. We want happiness. We want to be comfortable. We want protection, security, peace, joy. We don't want to be unemployed. We want to have a job that is exciting, exhilarating, thrilling, challenging. Very few people do, about one out of several hundred, I guess, but it's still what people want. We don't want deterioration of our living standards, and we don't want ill health. We don't want to feel like we're in pain and we ache and we can't quite focus our eyes, we can't quite hear the way we should, and we've got bursitis in one elbow and arthritis in the other one. Nobody wants to live in a condition like that, the way millions do. And so, of course, no matter who we are, what color we are, where we are, we express it in our many languages pretty much the same way. We want to feel good. We want to live the good life. We want good health. We don't want people hassling us. We don't want to have to send our kids off to war. We don't want the neighbor backing over our petunia bed or driving his truck through the back fence or stealing our daughters or running off the pigs, chickens, and cows. We all want the same thing. In almost every country surveyed, people tended to believe that their lives have actually improved in the last few years and that they will improve even more. And the expectations were the highest in the areas where the living standards were the lowest, obviously. But paradoxically to that, you come back to the United States in the wake of the elections, and you look at all these people out of a job, most of whom will probably still be out of a job a year, year and a half from now, wondering why in the world they don't have a new job. You look at all these people who expected prices to be brought down, and yet their personal incomes to go up, and inflation not to be refueled, and at the same time have a relief in the tax burden. And they'll be looking around in bewilderment in a few more months, wondering why in the world all those things couldn't happen that way at the same time, not realizing that these are the proverbial irresistible forces and immovable objects coming directly into conflict, that it's absolutely impossible, you just can't have it all at the same time. When you come back to the United States, as we sample world opinion, here is that 6% of the world's population living in the midst of 50% of its wealth. And what do they want? They want the same thing the people in the pampas of Argentina, the same thing in the jungles of Togo or Malawi, or the vastness of the desert area of Chad. They want the same thing the people of the Southeast Asian periphery or Europe or Africa or Central or South America want. They want more. They want the good life. They want disease-free, long, healthy, happy, joyous, exciting, rewarding, fulfilling lives with an absolute minimum of interference from any outside source, be it government, neighbor, friend, relative, church, or fellow member of family. And we want it now. The key issues in voters' minds, showing pretty much an opinion sampling, if you can call it that, because after all, voters pretty much demand of people running for high office in this nation that they promise things they can't deliver. And the key issues they were thinking about all pretty much zeroed in on the self. All pretty much had to do with our own personal pocketbooks, our own bank accounts, our own headaches, our own physical condition, our own medical bills, our own children in school, whether we can own and carry a gun, whether our kid has to take a bus from point A to point B, or whether he can walk across the street to go to school. What about our jobs, prices, taxes, the budget? Abortion, welfare, guns, crime, cities, urban blight, health insurance, environment. These are the things that people were concerned about. But the arms race? No, that wasn't an issue. Nuclear proliferation? Not really. Never brought up much as an issue, though mentioned briefly in one of the debates. Southern Africa? No, not even an issue in the election. The Panama Canal? Forget it. After Reagan lost the nomination, nobody ever seemed to mention that again. How about Britain's crisis? The pound? What about the emergence of the powers in Central Europe? No, not even mentioned. What about population versus food? How far downstream will it be before we write off certain nations that the United States simply cannot keep afloat anymore? That wasn't mentioned. Weather? I think that's one of the most unpublicized, hideous disasters the world has ever seen, but nobody even reads about that anymore. We're in the middle of one of the most incredible droughts in anybody's living memory, and in far more than living memory, over into 100, 150, 200 years in some cases, in Europe, Britain, an unbelievable topsy-turvy, upside-down and backward weather in the United States. Several hundred thousand flock to the beaches in Los Angeles, 95-degree temperature, while they're digging out underneath a foot of snow or better in Indiana. Unbelievable. And all at the same time, on the same day. But that doesn't make headlines. Nobody's concerned about the fact that we're having drought, and that drought is going to drive up food prices. The drought is going to hurt the farmer, and the farmer has gotten the rawest deal out of all the income groups in the last several years. If you've checked a little bit about the price of foods, the price of beef, what's happening to the cattle market. No, these weren't issues either. Morals? That wasn't an issue. Social decay? No, never really came up. But jobs, prices, taxes, the budget. All of these were problems. People were really excited about the promises made by those who feel they've been given a mandate to go about the business of delivering all these wonderful things that everybody seems to want. I've said over and over again that every new president in the United States, very quickly upon assuming the reins of government in the White House, finds himself propelled and pushed along by imponderable forces seemingly beyond his control. And that months and months after taking office, in fact, perhaps a year, year and a half or more, it will almost seem as if the policies taken by the preceding administration will continue to prevail, because the unbelievable bureaucracy, the unbelievable, just huge, overpowering enormity and the size of government bureaucracy makes it so. So I believe that even though we have a new president in the United States, we're not going to see as many dramatic changes as people might wish. But it's interesting as you look into people's innermost desires, what they really want to get out of life, that they're pretty much the same from the Ukraine, if they could have asked the Ukrainians, which I guess they couldn't because the Russians won't let them, to Africa, to Japan, to the United States. We want the good life, and we want government to provide it. Now, the way to bring about all these wonderful things all these other people want is to do what we have been doing in the United States. And can you imagine a world where you would have the same situations prevailing in cities all over the third world, in Central and South America, Asia and Africa, as we have in the big cities in the United States? Presently, with Dallas, Houston, Detroit, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, any one of them you want to take, running at a murder rate above all of Scandinavia and probably throw in Britain put together every single year. By the time all these third world people have what they say they want, that is, for the people on farms to move to the cities and the cities to become far more industrialized so that they too can have the good life, so they too will be living in mountainous, burgeoning, giant, huge, ballooning clouds of gaseous smog, fighting each other to get out of that rotten botch into the outback, into the country they left to come to the city for the good life. Can you imagine the kind of a world it will be if and when all the third world people get what they want? The way to bring about everything they want, in the majority's opinion, is through greater industrialization in the already heavily industrialized West. People still favor more industry. Now, you can go across some of the nations of Europe and you can scarcely see. Oh, I could tell you about some of the unbelievable smog problems of even such high-altitude mountain-like cities such as Missoula, Montana, and Salt Lake City, Utah, I suppose. But then on the other hand, we ought to think about Essen and Wuppertal and Mainz and perhaps Köln, Bonn in West Germany. You haven't seen pollution until you go to the Ruhr on a pretty hot day with a temperature inversion. That's unbelievable. It's pretty bad in Belgium and also in France. And it's terrible in many parts of Britain, especially in the Leeds, Manchester, London areas, where you can have those black smogs that hang in there and take people's lives. It's pretty bad in Los Angeles, almost on a daily basis. They claim they have various degrees of smog alert. Nobody gets alert. Nobody even has the hackles on his hair rise up. Nobody looks out the window or does anything especially, but they tell us on the radio after everybody's going around wiping their eyes all day long, virtually watching bricks decay, I guess, they wonder a little later on, why bother telling us about an alert? Because nobody really got alert. You didn't see the smoke stopping. The freeway traffic wasn't halted. I don't think I've ever seen that happen. But when all these other people in the third world get what we've got, then it's going to be a better world, isn't it? Everybody be happier. When they can set fire to the rivers in Australia, like they did in Ohio. I mean, when you get a river to burn, that's going some. Now, I know they've cleaned up the Cuyahoga. I believe I heard a report to the effect that once again, it is impossible to set fire to that river and to burn the bridge and to bend those steel rails. And I'm glad that that is true. Now, there has been some progress made, at least in Western states and to some degree in the industrialized East, and some very sensational, huge lawsuits with which you're aware, no doubt, and familiar, have caused some multiple millions of dollars to change hands because of pollution of major industries along the eastern seaboard. Some of the rivers have been cleaned up, at least to some small degree. But the third world wants what we've got. And I don't understand it, because we're not happy with what we've got. And what we really want is an absence of a lot of what we've got, but we don't have the wit to know it. We really want to slow society down. We really want fewer cars, but we don't know that, because we just say we want cleaner air and more cars, and we can't have both of those, but we don't know that. We don't really want more industrialization because we want less pollution, but we don't seem to know that. We really ought to be building our homes differently than we are, further apart. We ought to live near our work and work near where we live, or perhaps better yet, work right where we live, but we don't know that either. We think we ought to commute about 30, 40, or 100 miles every single day, stare at each other's bumper stickers, breathe each other's exhaust, and fight each other back and forth to work and call this a good life. And the third world wants the same thing. Now, believe it or not, when asked about the ideal number of children in a family, the majority of people in the advanced nations chose no more than two, so we're finally getting the idea across in the Western world, and some extent even in Japan, that zero population growth for the present time is a good idea. As a matter of fact, many people actually feel the United States is way overpopulated, and that many other countries are too, and that the world simply cannot provide for the number of human beings that are presently inhabiting this globe of ours. But those who do not share those views, along with that some of the leaders of the third world nations who like to claim that the ideas of food versus population curves in the West is nothing more than a geopolitical issue by the Western powers to try to keep the third world down. And so some of them claim we've got to populate in order to get big enough to finally overthrow the United States. But if you can believe it or not, in some of those overcrowded countries, Central and South America, Asia, the Far East, more than a quarter of the respondents there of this international poll said they wanted at least four children, while the majority, more than two-thirds of the Africans, wanted five or more. Unbelievable, but that's what they want. So attitudes regarding family size all had to do, of course, with either total ignorance or religious opposition. And this could even be tribalism, animism, group instinct, some form of voodoo or what have you, in which the ideas of transmigration of various forms of souls or what have you in whatever tribal or grotesquely shaped admixture of religion might conceive this to be so, in which life is to be an unbroken chain, like in one nation where when the king dies they think that the baby that is born that next instant is the materialization of that same being in a different human form, and so he is instantly, be he born to some peasant on the side of the hill or some criminal in jail, he instantly is the next king. That used to be true in Nepal. It may not be under Chinese communist domination, but I think they did do away with that, I guess, because they probably took the old king, put him in jail. That's what communists usually do, isn't it? But when you think about some of these third world families that are already hideously overcrowded and underfed, wanting a lot more kids than they've got, you just can't believe it. In spite of the spirit of machismo, measuring a man's virility by the number of his offspring, religious opposition, ignorance of contraception, and all those things, we still found that the main reason throughout all of these areas where people wanted a big family was because the only way they can figure on having a good life is to have those kids out in the field working to provide it. And when it came right down to it, the size of one's family pretty much measured the size of one's affluence instead of the reverse, which might be true in the United States. The larger the family, the more the burden on the wage earner until those kids get big enough to get a job. But, of course, joblessness is higher among the teenagers and the various minority groups than any other group in the United States. So it's different in the third world. Attitudes regarding family size were incredible, showing an awful lot of false religion and an awful lot of ignorance. That disturbing desire to rush into the cities was rather weird. And the immense gulf revealed in the survey between the have and the have-not nations was interesting. The poorest fourth of the world's inhabitants live on a per capita income of less than $200 a year. Most Americans burn more than that in cigarettes. Some 900 million persons, the great majority of that group, subsist on $75 a year. That's less than some people, skilled and unskilled, including street sweepers, might make in a single day in some cases in the United States. And that's what some people live on over the period of a year. And when they were asked about their economic situations, people in Latin America, Africa, and the Far East said that they worry all or most of the time about meeting family expenses. Isn't that interesting? On $75 a year, they worry. Let me tell you that many an American family on $36,000, $42,000, $57,000 a year worries. Now, you figure that one out. Isn't there something wrong with people's values somewhere where the overpopulated want to populate more? Where the impoverished want more, but also the affluent want more. Isn't there something upside down and backward about what human beings actually think about this world of ours, the attitudes we have about the future, what we expect of our leaders and where we think we're going? What mankind really thinks about itself is rather shallow when you come right down to it, just like some of the key issues in voters' minds were rather shallow. The gigantic concerns of this world trembling on the brink of a nuclear age, of nuclear war, the proliferation of nuclear arms and of conventional arms into some of the most volatile parts of the world until the Middle East is festooned with weapons of imaginable and unimaginable descriptions. It's crazy time. Alarm and apathy shouldn't mix, but they do. A time when we ought to be alarmed, and yet we're apathetic and thinking about the food that goes into our mouth, the shirt on our back, the wallet in our pocket, the account in our bank, our future and our security. I can't believe that you could have flatulence, flaccidity, overindulgence, and overweight at the same time coexisting with famine, but we've got it. That we could have a world emergency with ease, but we've got it. Well, if you want to read about this crazy time, you ought to write for the current number of the Good News magazine that tells you that even though we are living in a time of an awful lot of bad news, when you look at all of this world, food, population, weather, drought, moral, social decay, the cities, Britain's crisis, the economy, South Africa, nuclear proliferation, the arms race, the threat of an additional Arab oil embargo, rising prices, scarce jobs, high taxes, big government, energy problems. Look at all of it. The toppling of government, the inability of government to deal with the problems, and wonder, are we really truly aware? Do we know where we're going? Do we know what's important, what's of any value in this world today? Do we know what we ought to be involved in, what we ought to be doing about it? Is there something that transcends these day-to-day human goals of ours? Few people are truly aware. We're sensitized to the little things that really affect our daily lives in some important way, like joblessness, low wages, high taxes, insurance rates, or gun control, but we're not really capable, it seems, of comparing potential Arab oil embargoes with the price of wheat in Canada, or the transition of government in the United States to a potential war in Korea, or the incredible underplayed, little-noticed, unpublicized drought that's been gripping Europe, Britain, Canada, and the United States, with international relations and the price of food, or any of the foregoing with biblical prophecy. We just can't seem to make the right comparisons. Well, if you'll write to the current number of the Good News magazine, maybe you can make some of those comparisons. It's called The Good News because it talks about a life and an age that is yet to come beyond this current civilization of ours. And at the same time, I'd like you to write for this booklet called The Modern Romans that shows we in the Western affluent world are exactly living the same kind of life as did the Roman Empire before it fell. The Modern Romans. If you will dial the toll-free number, 800-423-4444, you can have that booklet and the Good News magazine free of charge, absolutely no price. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, request the Good News and also the Modern Romans. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.